Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Assembly Minority Leader Brian Kolb, a Republican who represents New York's 131st District, including all of Ontario and parts of Seneca County. Mr. Leader, always a pleasure, a real pleasure to have you with us. Appreciate it.
Mine as well, and Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you and all of yours. So, Brian, if I could call you that, I guess the first question is, the governor didn't want to talk to the legislature in its usual place. And there seems to be a bit of a mud fight going on, or worse, between the members of the legislature and the governor. The Republicans, of course, the minority party in the assembly. But is this something that goes through the whole body, or is it just the Democrats and the Republicans in the Senate?
No, I think it actually stretches to both chambers based on my conversations with my colleagues in both chambers, both sides of the aisle. I think that the general feeling is that the governor has now made it a mission to disrespect the legislature's role in our state government. And I think that in it by itself is what the rub is. And the governor continues, or his press people continue, to rub salt whenever possible. And that does not help matters. Just recently, I read a little blurb about the governor's spokesperson taking a shot at John Flanagan regarding the fact that John Flanagan says, I hope these are the issues the governor talks about in his State of the State. And the spokesperson shoots back and, well, you know, Flanagan's more worried about his $100,000 and a part-time job. I mean, there's no call for that. There's no reason for it. And especially over the years where I think the Senate Republicans have worked fairly well with Governor Cuomo in trying to get some things done in Albany. So I don't know.
There are those who think that he, in fact, owned them and made sure that they were put into office as opposed to Democrats.
Well, there's some argument to that point, especially if you talk on some of the issues like minimum wage and paid family leave and others. I get that. But regardless, he still work with them. And to take pot shots at them, silly pot shots, just doesn't make sense to me.
I have to tell you, just in truth in advertising, this guy has a party who does the dirty mouthing of everybody on the governor's bid. He was my student on the Legislative Gazette years ago.
Really?
Am I supposed to be proud of that? Anyway, he's taken more than a few at me, by the way.
How quickly they forget.
Right. Anyway, now the governor seems to have adopted a new strategy. And the new strategy is to be the anti-Trump potential presidential candidate. He's running a national campaign right here in New York.
Well, I think that's exactly what's going on. And I think the political roadshow that he's on with the different regional addresses, his different public positions, certainly are trying to say, hey, you know, I'm a press conference with Bernie Sanders. All that is optics that is not going to help him govern New York State. And so if you want to run for president, fine. But, you know, try to take the high road in terms of while you are governor here to make sure you're doing the right thing and working with the state legislature and the other branch of government judiciary to do things the right way.
Well, I want to go back for a moment to the symbolism of not adhering to what all of his predecessors had done for years, which was to speak from the assembly chamber, this large room, august. It really did speak of the, as you say, the coordinate roles of government. Then he moved it down to the big hall in which he showed, I thought, silly pictures of Shelley Silver wearing short pants and Dean Skelos flying airplanes, which I never got the funniness of that. I think did destroy the relationship. But now he's taking six on the road. Is there something wrong with that?
Well, is there something wrong with that if once he's addressed the legislature and the other branch of government and the state comptroller and the state attorney general? No, you can go out on the road after that. But I think he has a moral and constitutional obligation to talk directly to all of us in state government, because state government is just not only about the governor. And all of us have a role. And we represent, the legislators represent over 19 million people. We all know our districts better than the governor does. And this shouldn't be about a, you know, a theatrical production. And it should be more about communicating about serious issues, that even issues that he wants to take action on, fine. But he should be addressing the legislature directly. I've never liked the move out of the Assembly Chamber to the Convention Center. I think also over the years, I think you know this as well, that if there was some contentious things going on with the legislature and the governor got to feel that directly based on the reaction in the audience of the legislature that was there.
Which is why he moved, of course.
Correct. Exactly correct, which is why he went on the road. And even some of the areas of the state that he's not going to, Rochester, the Southern Tier, Utica, the North Country. So it's not like he's addressing every region, but each of those regions that he's not going to all have issues with him, especially along the lines of economic development and tough questions he doesn't want to answer by the local press. So this is all about control, control the optics, control the message, not have any controversy, et cetera, et cetera.
I hear a rumor that Stephanie Miner, the popular mayor of Syracuse, might want to run against him in a primary. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I don't really know Stephanie Miner very well. I used to represent Onondaga County, but I don't any longer. So I really can't gauge whether she'd be a formidable candidate or not. It's always about, can you raise the resources to be competitive? You don't have to have the most money. You just have to have competitive resources.
Although, you know, it could be said, Mr. Leader, that Ms. Teachout almost cleaned his clock everywhere except in New York City.
Correct.
In the burbs, yeah.
Correct. And again, I haven't done any polling on the governor in New York City, but I think his numbers in New York City still remain pretty good.
Yeah.
Having said that, you don't have to beat him in New York City, per se. You just have to make it relatively competitive, getting 35 to 40% of the vote, and you still get beat by 20 points in New York City. But now when you move outside of New York City, which is where his popularity starts to go downhill fast, you know, that's a different ballgame.
And let's remember George Pataki.
Correct.
I used to go around telling everybody, you can't beat somebody with nobody. I'm sorry, I know you're not going to agree with this, but they did.
Well, at the time, to be perfectly fair, he was a nobody, Governor Pataki, at that time.
Yeah.
He was a state assemblyman, a state senator, and even when he was in the state senate, he was sort of ostracized a little bit. And then, voila, he beats Mario Cuomo.
For three terms.
Yeah.
So now let's talk about some of the specific proposals that Andrew Cuomo is making, one of which is, of course, one that I like an awful lot, which is anybody under $125,000. He's obviously trying to bring the middle class into it. We always had TAP for the very poor in this state. But now the idea of bringing anybody in who's going to mount a big debt, you know, a college debt. And so you say, okay, you're included in this. We're going to educate your kids if you make $125,000 or less.
Well, I think first and foremost, I think you got to take this in the broader view of what are the priorities of the state budget. And there are schools across the state in elementary and secondary education that don't have the resources to deliver a sound public education right now. Obviously, that's been the clamor for charter schools, feeling that the public school system is not meeting the needs of our students. You also have, from that perspective, you have underfunding of, which we've been talking about recently, direct care workers, those folks that assist the developmentally disabled and folks that are confined to their homes with health issues. Again, a different, more important priority in terms of what we should be looking for funding. My preference is always is that if you can provide additional assistance through the tuition assistance program or tax credits for expenses for college, similar to like a mortgage deduction, I think that makes a lot more sense than just a free handout. And, you know, the people I talk to back home, people that put their kids through college, that work two jobs, et cetera, they're not all in favor of just a free handout program. And of course, along with this, there's no details. How's it going to work? How many bites at the apple does a prospective student have at going to school? Is this a two-year degree program now become a seven-year program because somebody else is paying the bill? What's the incentive? Is it just an income barometer, or is there some sort of grade performance while you're in high school before you get that assistance? Another question is, not every student is college either ready, or they may not even want to go to school, but it's free, so I'm going to go. Versus having are there other programs to encourage skilled trade training, which we sorely, desperately need, and provide good paying jobs? So those are a lot of questions you have to ask on a program.
They're
like
all
this.
Answerable, of course, right? I mean, you could say, I went to Hunter. You needed an 85 average to get into Hunter when I went, and it was free.
Well, when I went to community college, my parents were very poor. We would have easily met this income.
Right.
But I'll be perfectly honest with you. I went out, and I got a part-time job so I can go to college. I went to, at that time, it was called Community College of the Finger Lakes. It's now FLCC, Finger Lakes Community College, and I had to borrow money. I took out loans. My parents didn't have the ability to help me at all, but I appreciated the fact much more when I went to school that, hey, I've got to get my education. And that's what I'm saying, that those are some of the elements that don't fit, quite frankly, on the metric scale of just income.
Right. So he has other things that he's been talking about. One of the things he's done recently is to pardon a lot of people or commute sentences, one of which was Judith Clark. I have to confess, I knew her parents a bit. And, you know, there are those people, children of the people who were killed in the Brinks robbery, who say, hey, my parents don't come back. How do you commute a sentence like this? What do you think?
I totally disagree with the governor on this. The fact that he met with Judith Clark and did not meet with the relatives of the folks that actually lost their lives is incomprehensible to me. And I think that this is where the governor gets a little tone deaf in terms of what I'll call the law and order belief that most the average person believes in. And the fact that this person clearly was part of a crime that took the lives of human beings, and the fact that he has an individual meeting with this person and now decides that she deserves the opportunity for parole, I think is laughable and also a detriment to the parole system that we have in place.
Don't you think it's possible that what he's doing here, Leader Kolb, is that he is moving to his left because Zephyr Teachout did do so much damage the last time? He doesn't want that to happen again. So he's coming up with a bunch of issues that he thinks, including the Judith Clark thing, might help him on his left.
Well, I would say this, is that if you look at this past election, regardless whether you like the outcome or not, if you take out the states of California and New York, which are as left can be in terms of its journal politics.
That's the difference between you and me. I just say, thanks to God, but you don't. You don't.
And I go, dear Lord, it could be better. So we're praying in a different message. But he seems to be listening to you more than me right now.
I don't think so. Trump is going to be the president.
Well, that's where I was going. You had if you took the popular vote wins of New York and California out of the number,
yeah,
Trump wins the popular vote overwhelmingly in the other 48 states.
But he didn't.
States.
He lost by 3 million votes. That's no, the United that's, States.
Yeah, no, I'm yeah. just saying. Yeah. That's California and New York's totals.
Yeah.
So all I'm also saying is this swing left is not going to help. He may help him position himself to a possibility of a Democratic nomination.
But Brian, I'm not talking about presidential now. He's still got to run in a gubernatorial primary if Zephyr ain't one of those people runs against him, and he doesn't want that to happen again.
Yeah, well, again, I would point this out, that if he continues down this path of ignoring the voters in upstate New York and also down in Long Island, even if he wins New York City, that's his peril. And these moves that he's making right now, some of the issues that quote-unquote is progressive, is not winning him votes in upstate.
Do you have any hope, Brian Kolb, the Republican leader in the Assembly, which, you know, those guys draw their own districts and you don't have a chance? It's wrong in the Assembly, it's wrong in the Senate. Do you have a feeling that we may be edging closer to the Supreme Court of the United States saying no more gerrymandering?
I hope so. Across the entire country, that's what's wrong with having what I'll call fair competitive elections. I know that I would say conservatively, if we had fair district drawing in New York State, we'd probably have 6 to 7 more seats for the Assembly Republican Conference right off the bat. Because I know since I've been here under Shelley Silver and the redistricting process, they literally took seats away by the stroke of a pen. And then how they drew the remaining populations in, for instance, in New York City, they made them smaller so they can get an extra seat or two.
It's disgusting.
Wrong. It is. It's wrong. And they've had this peace agreement between the Senate and the Assembly for years. We'll take care of ours, you take care of yours, to enhance the majority's positions. And that's why we don't have a much more competitive balance of legislators, especially in the state assembly.
Now, we did have fair fights in the Congress because a federal judge drew the lines, right?
Correct.
And that makes a big difference.
It sure does. And again, I would like to see this through the entire country that, you know, just as what one man, one vote is the premise, but it should be one man, one vote fairly.
What kind of democracy can you have if the people in office are allowed to draw their own districts?
Correct.
That's really wild. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the trial. You can't walk around Albany with your ear to the ground without hearing that Joe Prococo, the announced third brother of Andrew Cuomo, is on trial for some very bad things, which could send him to jail for a long, long time. And he was the governor's closest aide, the same governor who came riding into town saying that he was going to clean up Albany. So?
Well, I think it's not just Joe Prococo that's under indictment, Todd Howe.
Who has pleaded guilty, even
and
worse.
Who seems to be cooperating with the feds right now. So
or
we still
wrote in a recent column, singing like a canary.
And don't know what that outcome's going to be yet. More to follow. But even there, Governor Cuomo said, I don't know who Todd Howe is. And then they produce a picture.
You know, this guy, he says, I don't know who Todd Howe is. And we all know that he was one of his closest associates.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's just a blatant misrepresentation of the truth. But yet it seems like it's a story for like 15 minutes and then it goes away. And I think the governor, you know, does not want to talk about these issues. And I think that's why he doesn't spend a lot of time in Albany. Certainly, I've heard from Albany Press that he's becoming even more contentious, picking up the phone, swearing at journalists, ridiculing them for stories that they're writing about him. That is not a good image to be projecting if you've got other plans down the road.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Donald Trump. You are a Republican. I don't know what your announced position was on Trump before the election, but how is it to be a Republican in a state like New York, which has voted so substantially against Trump? Do you have to watch a step?
Well, I don't, because I'm Brian Kolb before Trump, and I'm going to be Brian Kolb after Trump, which
is... But you didn't really support him during the election, did you?
Well, I wasn't supporting Hillary Clinton, I can tell you that much.
Okay, go ahead.
But no, I think the old saying is politics is local. The most important thing I will never forget is I'm elected by the people of the 131st Assembly District, and that's my politics. That's what I am concerned about, public policy. My dual role as legislative leader for our conference is I'm trying to represent all of our members and their different views going from Buffalo to Long Island, including the city. So I don't get immersed in what Donald Trump is doing or not doing in Washington. I focus on New York State and what those things are in my sphere of influence and control. So, you know, I really just don't pay a lot of time.
Have you met him yet?
I have not, actually.
Uh-huh.
Not spoken to him.
Interesting. So the ethics reform that he wanted, something I much believe in, I think there should be a limit on outside income. And that's what he wanted. You know, I always agree with this governor, believe me. But on that one, I agreed with him. There seemed to be some real resistance from the legislature to the point where they wouldn't trade that for a pay raise.
Well, again, not being involved in the discussions that the two majorities were having with the governor on these issues, I don't know what the real hang-ups were. Certainly, I've introduced legislation on limiting outside income. I don't have any outside income myself personally.
You can live on, let's say, $100,000. You can live on $100,000?
Well, I sure would heck hope so. And if I can't, there's a whole lot of people that have it tougher than I do. But you live within your means, whatever that is. And certainly, again, you're talking to a guy that's family was poor. My parents had a business that went bankrupt. They had some tough luck along the way. I had four brothers and sisters. This is something where money was never, in terms of family wealth, was not something I ever had and still don't have compared to, you know, those that are millionaires and that sort of thing. And God bless them all. I'm happy
for
them.
So you sponsored, which is very interesting. I didn't know that. You sponsored limits on outside income, just like the United States Congress.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Was there pushback from your colleagues?
Well, not that they told me directly. There could be pushback that I didn't hear about.
Right.
You know, that Darren Kolb, what's he doing now?
I see that one of your predecessors, James Todisco, Jim Todisco, as leader, moved from the assembly where he had languished with the Republicans who don't have a lot of power to the Senate. Have you talked to him and asked him, what's that like all of a sudden to be thrust into a place where you actually have a little power?
Well, you know, I have not spoken to Jim. And again, I don't know if any of this is factual or not, but I heard that one of the bills that the governor vetoed at the end of the year was a local hotel motel tax bill for Jim's assembly district. And apparently it was in a whole stack of bills. And then the governor said, well, the reason I vetoed it was we need an entire policy for all of these. But yet earlier in the year, he signed bills that were just like Jim Todisco's. And
Todisco can't keep his mouth shut. He really gives him a hard time. He gives the governor a hard time.
But what I'm saying is I haven't heard anything whether Jim has given him a hard time. And normally, Jim would be everywhere talking
about
it.
On this issue, but I have seen Jim give him a very tough time.
Yeah, and so, he may. I mean, I'm not in the Albany market, so I don't.
Right.
I live at, you know, Canandaigua.
So is there anything that could happen in these next 2 years that would say, okay, you know, people are disgusted with Albany, people are disgusted with the political fighting and infighting. Do you see any bill or idea that might come out of the governor and the legislature that they could make common sense with?
Well, the honest answer is I don't know, because you know, we're just starting the legislative two-year cycle, and I would say three-fourths of the bills we may even look at haven't even been introduced yet. And certainly we're into the political rhetoric now, going back and forth. You know, the governor's doing his State of the State. He's laying out some of these proposals he wants to talk about. What I don't know is how much of a rub truly is in the two majorities with the governor. I know the assembly majority members were really unhappy about his interference on the pay raise commission. Does that spill
and
over?
He really did that, right? He appointed the members of the commission that was supposed to be independent, and he was mad at the legislature, and then they said no pay raise. So everybody just at least suspects that he called in the play.
Oh, there's no doubt he did. There's no doubt. And that, the whole point was the agreement when that legislation was creating the commission was to take the politics out of it. That was the whole point. And then he injects politics in it. Regardless where people think whether the legislature deserves a pay raise or not, I get that piece. However, to interfere with the separate independent commission, that's where he alienated people, because that was the whole point of having the commission in the first place.
But it does seem now, as you indicated earlier in the program, that he's out for blood and that he just can't stop fighting with everybody. I mean, Tom DiNapoli, a very good public servant, he's after DiNapoli. From time to time, he's after Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general. I've often said, but he says, well, why doesn't he play well with all these people? And I always say, because they're not him. And I don't know if that's true. You think so?
I think that'd be one of the fair candidate assessments. And I think, and I've said this, I think what Governor Cuomo would prefer is that he would have entire oversight and direction of the legislature, the judiciary, the state comptroller's office, and the state attorney general.
And, unfortunately, because I worked there for 40 years, the state university, can't keep his hands off the state university.
Correct.
I mean, if ever an institution should be left alone, that's it. And we see what the result of that is with the indictment of Elaine Calieros from the SUNY Poly, who's among all of those guys who got indicted.
Correct.
Amazing. Just amazing. Well, you have a minute. Is there anything you want to say to leave us with that comes to your mind?
Well, I'm the eternal optimist. Hope springs eternal. And as we move closer to spring, I'm hoping to return to a sense of sanity in state government and stop poking these personal attacks between the governor and the legislature. I don't call speaking out about public policy poking personally, but that's one of the things I told Governor Cuomo initially when he first became governor. I will speak out, but it's not on your personal stuff. It's on public policy. And that's what we have to focus on. That's what the people really care about.
Mr. Paladino has said some frightfully racist things. He ran for governor the last time. What do you think about all of that?
First of all, it was deplorable what he said. He shouldn't have said it. It should be outright rejected in terms of tolerance of those remarks. And I really think that, you know, Carl Paladino has no political future in New York State, based on the premise of those comments.
Have you had any direct conversation with him about any of this?
No.
No. Well, Minority Leader Kolb, thank you so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure and a delight to have you here.
Back at you. Thank you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.